There was no doubt that this was a man skilled in battle and in other arts that were usually reserved for private time. Caleb raked a disinterested stare over Ash's body.
What do you know about me, Acheron?
He actually pronounced his name with the full Greek accent so that it came out as Acheron instead of the Acheron most non-Greek people used when referring to him. Acheron adjusted the black backpack over his shoulder, one that bore a white anarchy symbol on it.
We're brethren, you and I. Both damned by our own actions, both unique. I know you a lot better than you think.
Caleb rolled his eyes.
Don't try to play sage with me, Atlantean. I'm a lot older than you are. I know, but that doesn't stop me from seeing you. Though I have yet to understand why you're watching over Nick. What do you care what happens where he's concerned?
Why do you watch over him, Atlantean? Caleb countered defensively.
What interest do you have?
Ash's answer was simple and honest.
We're friends.
And it was one Caleb seized and turned on him.
I, too, am his friend.
An evil grin spread across Ash's face.
Your kind doesn't have friends.
Neither does yours.
Acheron inclined his head to him respectfully.
Touché.
Then Cody fell underneath his bold, intense scrutiny.
And the same holds for you. I have no idea why you'd be guarding him.
Cody smiled. Aren't you the one who always says that sometimes things have to go wrong in order to go right?
I also say that just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Those words haunted her. Did Acheron know about her ultimate orders where Nick was concerned? A tremor went down her spine at the thought.
No one, man, beast, or other, could know why she was really here.
Nick wouldn't take it well, and neither would her higher-ups. For that matter, neither would she. They stopped their conversation as Dev Peltier approached their small group. He opened up the bag he was carrying, which held soft drinks and bottled water.
I figured we could all use something to drink. Amy has snacks in her bag.
Thank you, they all three said. Acheron wandered off to talk to Kyrian. Cody opened her water and resumed her conversation with Caleb. It was odd to her that he was technically more beautiful than Nick. Where Nick had reached that strange phase of turning from boy to man and his body wasn't quite proportional yet, Caleb was perfectly formed, no doubt enhanced by his demonic powers. His black wavy hair was fashionably cut and his body perfectly formed. Right now, he was leaning forward with his elbows on his bent knees. The ties from his hoodie fell down, brushing against his Coke can. The white of the hoodie was a stark contrast to his dark olive skin.
Yeah, he was made of the stuff that would have both teenage girls, their mothers, squealing and clawing at each other for his attention.
She might have had some stomach flutters for him herself, had she not known what he really was. Instead, it was Nick, with his boyish charm and the promise of his hotness to come, that lured her against her will even when she knew she should stay as far away from him as possible. Which returned her to his earlier trip that they had yet to discuss.
You never did tell me what you learned from Adarian.
Caleb snorted as he set his Coke can down on the floor and stared at her from beneath his bangs. Something about his current position reminded her of a panther in the wild, eyeing the prey it wanted to bring down.
He's going to come after Nick.
That news jolted her. What? Why? Caleb straightened up, then leaned back in his chair so that he could stretch his long legs out in front of him.
Not really sure, and he didn't admit it to me, but I felt it, and it was unmistakable.
Is he the one behind this attack, then?
Caleb shook his head. This was human. I can smell a demon attack from a mile away, and this does not have that stench.
Maybe, but there was always a first time for being wrong. Haven't you ever been fooled? He gave her a droll stare before he crossed his arms over his head against the wall.
No, I'm not a Lowler.
That was the term his kind used for low-level demons.
Even though I'm technically a mid-level class, I was one of the strongest generals in the Primus Bellum. with more kills than anyone except Jared, and I'm not saying he was the better fighter. We never battled against each other, but I would lay skills against his anytime, any place.
That news shocked her silent. While she'd known Caleb was old, she'd had no idea he was that old.
Wow.
Are you serious?
He didn't react to her questions physically. Instead, his dark eyes alone taunted her. Before you judge me, because I can feel the hatred surging inside you against me, let me explain my political ties in that war. I personally carried the banner for Verlin, and I was the one who led the whole of his armies against the Obsidian Triad.
That news was even more shocking. You're not evil, then.
It was a statement of fact.
He sneered at her comment.
You're as bad as the humans. Come on, Cody. You should know that we don't all serve the Dark Powers.
Yeah, but you do now.
Pain flashed in his eyes so fast that she wasn't sure she hadn't imagined it. We all make mistakes, Cody. Sometimes I think the only point of our miserable lives is simply to learn how to live with the consequences of the bad decisions we've made.
By his tone, she could tell his were severe. I'm sorry, Caleb.
For what?
Whatever it is that brings that light of hurt into your eyes. The worst wounds, the deadliest of them, aren't the ones people see on the outside. They're the ones that make us bleed internally.
Caleb didn't respond in any way, but as he pulled his watch out of his pocket to check the time,
a strange sensation went through her. She saw him then, on an ancient battlefield, in full demon armor. She tried her best to home in on the image, but it was gone almost as fast as it appeared. Still, it left her with one thing that was undeniable, and it explained a lot about his idiosyncrasies.
You're not just a demon. You're a demigod.
Caleb went perfectly still.
Then he relaxed. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you do, she said, her voice rising at the end with bitter amusement. That's what Asheron meant when he said you were similar creatures.
Caleb scoffed. I'm nothing like him. He's cut from a very different bolt.
Maybe, but that brought her back to their original topic. What you said about Adarian doesn't make sense. I thought he wanted Nick protected.
That's what he told me originally.
Then why do you doubt him now?
Caleb shrugged. There's no reason to, and yet, he's coming for him. Soon. I can't tell you the exact minute or even the day it'll happen, but I can feel it building like a simmering pot getting ready to boil over.
While she didn't welcome that news, it didn't really disturb her. We'll stop him when he does. They had to.
No, Cody, he said dryly. We won't. You and I don't have the ability to defeat him. And I know this for a fact. The one and only time in my entire military career that I was knocked flat on my rump and viciously defeated was by the first of the Malachis, one who didn't possess a third of the power of their current elder Malachi. When Adarian comes, Nick will die. There's nothing you and I can do to stop him.
She didn't believe that for a minute. Nick can't die. We cannot allow that to happen under any circumstance. I know you see what I do. The next Malachi
will free Noir from his hole and rain a complete slaughter down on all of us, but there is something even worse than that outcome.
In that instant, she could swear she had an ulcer, even though it was an impossibility for her species. I don't want to hear this.
But she had no choice.
If something was out there worse than their next enemy, she had to know about it. Forewarned was forearmed. What?
Adarian doesn't have to kill Nick. He can absorb him.
Her throat went dry at the horror of that thought. Whenever a creature like them absorbed the powers of another, they took all of their powers and strengths and combined them with the ones they already had. Should that happen? The Malachi wouldn't kill them. Oh no, that would be too kind. They would all become the outlet for his voracious cruelty. And the only one who could fight Adarian successfully and possibly defeat him was currently in a chemically induced coma.
I might as well get a tattoo on my forehead. Abandon hope, all ye who see this, 'cause we're about to get royally screwed.
Chapter 8. Nick couldn't see anything. He felt like he'd been swallowed whole by darkness. It was so thick and stifling that it made it hard to breathe. Where am I? The last thing he remembered was Cody holding onto his leg in the ambulance while she talked to the attending EMT. Everything else was a total blur. Am I dead? Where would a dead Catholic Malachi spend eternity anyway? That was a scary and sobering thought, and a question he didn't ever want to have an answer for. All right, if I'm not dead, the next baboon who hits me with a board is going to get it shoved someplace real uncomfortable on his body. In fact, Nick would turn his attacker into a human or demon popsicle with it. Yeah, that'd learn them. Smelling something rancid in the thick, opaque air, he grimaced and held the back of his hand to his nose to try and block it. God, what was that? Smelled worse than burned powdered eggs, and he'd mistakenly thought nothing could outdo those. Well, nothing other than the one and only time he'd made the mistake of walking into the men's restroom as Stone was walking out of it. Oh yeah, that was definitely worse than this. He didn't know what werewolves ate on a regular basis, but whatever it was, it rotted them from the inside out. No wonder Stone had perpetual PMS. Hello there! He jumped at the unexpected voice coming from something that was within touching distance. Excuse me? I said hello. Do you not know that word? Do you not speak English? Not sure what to make of the strange voice, Nick stepped back from it. I'm not sure how to respond to that, but I do speak English most days, and I understand you and the word hello. Ah, the disembodied voice said as if relieved, then added, I am speaking English, right? Nick scowled. Yeah, pretty sure. Good, sometimes it's hard to tell. Languages come and go. Sometimes I know them, sometimes... Who are you? Nick asked, interrupting him. Where are we? Which is it? The stranger asked in an exasperated tone. Who or where? Might as well throw a what in there too, just to hit all the bases. Oh, and I forgot how and why. That is all of them, at least I think it is. The voice paused, then counted them off. Who, what, where, when, how, and why? Yes, that's all of them, he said proudly. Then his tone turned to one of fretful anxiety. Though the answer to some of them, I don't know. Like, how did you get here when you don't know where here is? That's kind of hard to do, isn't it? I mean, if you went someplace, shouldn't you know how you got there? And then by default, you should know where the where is because you got yourself there, right? Nick felt like he'd blindly stumbled into a who's on first skit. Whoever this guy was, he wasn't firing on all burners. Dude was seriously listening to port and about to capsize. Nor do I know why you're here, he continued, without even stopping to take a breath. That baffles me, too. If you don't know where you are, why would you go someplace when you don't know where it is? And people call me names. At least I know where I am and who I'm talking to, and I never go anyplace without knowing beforehand where it is I've gone, or at least where I was trying to get to, except for this one time. We won't go there. Not because I don't know where it leads. I do. It leads to a bad memory I've no wish to revisit. Kind of like smelly relatives and nasty bosses. I don't want to revisit them either, unless it's to give them nightmares. In that case, game on. Nick gaped the whole way through his tirade. Yeah, this was the strangest person he'd ever met. And when you took into consideration that the captain of his football team was a werewolf, his boss an immortal vampire slayer who had a ninja-like knife-wielding housekeeper, his tutor was death, his best friend a demon, and his girlfriend something else entirely, and then there was the Seamy. Yeah, boy. Nick knew every variation of weird, even when it didn't slap him in the face. Most days he was drowning in it, but this guy... He took weird to a level all his own. When he finally paused for a breath, Nick quickly interjected, How about starting with the first, and then answering the latter? Why didn't you say so? I declare, some people are so strange. My name is Osmodeus, and you're home. Did you not know that? Nick scoffed. Dude, this is not my home. For one thing, my house isn't this dark, even when my mama gets cheap and refuses to use lights in it. Bourbon Street ain't ever this dark. Asmodeus made a sound of disgust. Can't you see in the dark? Was the guy totally off his gourd? No one could see in something this dark. Dang it, Jim, I'm not a bat. I'm a boy. Okay. He stretched the word out. My name's not Jim. I just told you it's Asmodeus, and why can't you see in the dark? Obviously not a Star Trek fan. but why would he even begin to think that Nick could see in pitch black nothing?
Not really.
Hmm, odd.
Okay.
He took Nick's hand. Nick pulled back. Dude, don't touch me.
Why not?
Why not, really? He had to explain stranger danger and personal space? Where did this guy live that he didn't understand grabbing another dude's body parts without an invitation was a first-class ticket to a major butt-whipping event?
Look, I don't know you, and we're not dating, so keep your hands off me.
Again, with the annoyed noise.
Then how can I lead you if I can't touch you when you can't see?
How about you don't lead me anywhere? Nick was beginning to like the darkness. Unlike Asmodeus, it was quiet and rather peaceful, and it definitely didn't give him a headache.
But you said you couldn't see.
Nick was aghast at the way this guy's mind worked. That doesn't mean you can touch me.
I'm so confused.
That made two of them. Obviously, this place had a whole different code of conduct than what he was used to. All of a sudden, someone grabbed Nick from behind and hauled him backward.
What are you doing here?
The man snarled in his ear. Anger set fire to Nick's blood and sent it thrumming through his veins like molten lava. His mother was the only one who used a tone that angry with him. And, occasionally, Kyrian. Manyara and Rosa from time to time. And he really should add Talon, though the Celt did better than most. His teachers and principal, of course. He definitely couldn't leave them out. Yeah, okay, so he ticked a lot of people off, but...
Dude, I don't know you. I dang sure don't have to answer you.
Dude,
the voice said in a mocking tone with pauses between the words as the man did a bad Valley Girl imitation.
I'm like so gonna kick your annoying ass.
Nick stiffened as he assumed his cock-of-the-walk stance that said he was ready to battle.
I'd like to see you try.
The man shot through the darkness so fast that Nick didn't hear or feel him moving until he had Nick by the throat.
Word to the wise, punk. Don't dare someone until you know who and what you're dealing with, and what they're capable of. You'll live a lot longer and stay in one piece if you memorize that, trust me.
Trust you?
Nick choked out through his constricted throat.
I don't even know what species you are.
Precisely my point.
He let go of Nick and stepped back. 1 second, they were in the dark. In the next, they were inside a room that looked like something out of the Middle Ages. There was a fireplace so big that Nick could easily walk into it and have a spread-out brunch for 3 people. 2 comfortable-looking chairs with giant wings were set in front of it, over a lion-skin rug he was pretty sure had blood and bite marks still on it. In the far corner was a black desk that had ornate skeletal carvings on the wood. And the man? Not what Nick had expected at all. He looked like a banker or stockbroker or something normal. Dressed in an elegant navy pinstriped double-breasted suit, his shirt was crisp and white, with a blood-red tie that flashed with something Nick would swear was living skulls inside the fabric. His dark blonde hair was slicked back from his handsome face. But it was his eyes that were terrifying. Cold, merciless, mean. It was like looking at death. And since death tutored him, he ought to know it when he saw it. A frigid green, his eyes were so clear that they gave the illusion of glowing. Asmodeus was a little more typical. Spiked white hair framed an impish face. His gray eyes showed exactly how mischievous he could be. And he glanced around the room as if he'd never seen it before.
Who are you?
Nick asked the man in the suit. A wry smile curved his lips.
I've been called many things by many people. But those who want to live usually refer to me as Thorn, and they do so in a reverent tone.
Not a soothing name, by any means, ranked up there with the Dark Hunter named Venom, and Venom was definitely not someone you wanted to mess with, either.
What are you?
Thorn quirked an offbeat, wry grin.
That's easy. And yet so complicated that I have no wish to venture there with you. Suffice it to say, I'm a carbon-based life form, and I'm one of the deadliest things that call the shadows home. And you, Malachi, are in a place you shouldn't be.
And that is?
Asmodea.
Nick felt ill with that knowledge. How the heck did he get here? Like Asmodeus said, how could someone go someplace and have no clue how they got there? Asmodeus grinned. Unfortunately, it's not named after me. Rather, I'm named after it. That part kind of blows, got me bullied a lot as a small demon. Really hasn't helped my adulthood all that much either. And when it comes to females, I'd really like to find my father and repay him for this hideous name he stuck me with. Thorn held his hand up in a dismissive gesture.
Demon, go home or shut up. If you continue to annoy me, you'll be a stain on my floor, understood?
Asmodeus nodded. Nick was still trying to make sense of everything. I don't understand. How did I get here? Thorn placed his hand on Nick's shoulder again. In the next heartbeat, his eyes flashed silver, then red, and settled on a hazel brown.
Nick, your body is lying unconscious in a hospital bed. I cannot stress to you enough that you can't let yourself do that, ever, under any circumstances.
What do you mean? I can't sleep?
That would stink.
He'd had visions of Nightmare on Elm Street dancing in his head. Now where was a sugar plum when he needed one? Releasing him, Thorn laughed.
That could be entertaining. A Malachi with hallucinations brought on by sleep deprivation. But no, sleep is different. You're still in the world of man when you slumber. Half in, half out. Any little disturbance will wake you and snatch you back to the conscious realm. However, when you're medically unconscious, you're beyond the realm of man and are fully on this side of the nether realm. Without being anchored in the human realm, your geist, or essence, rather, will automatically bring you here to serve your master. It's also why you can't ever take drugs or drink alcohol, my friend. The minute you lose control of yourself and alter your mental state, you open yourself up for others to manipulate and harm you.
You could even be possessed, Asmodeus said with a hopeful note in his voice. Thorn cast an evil glare at him, and he literally retreated 2 steps.
Well, he could, Asmodeus murmured.
Nick gave Thorn a droll stare.
Have no fear about the drinking and drugs. Waking up in my own urine and vomit or freaking out from a psychotic episode doesn't appeal to me in the least. Have no plans to do either, and I still don't know what you are.
Thorn's features hardened.
Forget Ambrose. I'm the person you don't want to become. If you want some free advice, and I know everyone does, he said sarcastically, stop caring about anyone but yourself. So long as you care more for someone else than you do yourself, you're screwed. You'll never stand tall, and you'll always have a weakness that will stop you dead in your tracks and bring you to your knees.
He leaned forward until their noses almost touched.
Always put yourself first, kid. With all the regrets I have, and believe me, I have many, that's my biggest one. The dumbest mistakes of your life will all come from the choices you make trying to protect what you love.
Wow, thank you, Mr. Sunshine, Nick said with feigned enthusiasm. That was the complete opposite advice of his mother, who believed you couldn't live happily unless you cared about someone. To her, that was the point of life, making connections, valuing someone else above yourself. Without that, Nicky, we're just meat sacks waiting to be free of the misery of our lives. You'll never know true happiness until you find that small handful of people you'd die to protect. Nick clapped Thorn on the back. I'm so glad you came out with your sunny disposition and thoughts to cheer me up, because I just didn't feel crappy enough today. Thank you, Mr. Sunmeister. Meister Sun?
Thorn rolled his eyes. Don't listen to me. Fine, whatever. I didn't listen either. And you see what lush and lovely housing it got me.
He gestured toward the sinister hole they were in.
Talk about sunshine. We don't get, well, any here. And it never fails to amaze me how you can explain everything to someone, right down to the smallest detail. You show them exactly what not to do in order to be happy or successful, and still, they don't do it. They don't listen. They come up with more excuses than a felon in prison. Fascinating. Disgusting, but fascinating. You can lead a demon to water, but you can't force it to bathe.
Sighing, Thorn glanced around the room, then back to Nick.
And right now we have to get you out of here before someone else, who is not a good friend of yours or mine, senses you.
He cut a pointed stare to Asmodeus.
and no one is going to tell anyone or anything on the other side of that magic wall that you were here, either. Not unless they want to see the true, ugly side of my temper.
Asmodeus gulped, audibly. Nick was about to speak when something slammed against the door, hard, and from the deep sound of it, it was large, and most likely, ugly.
And look, lucky us, they're here.
Thorne said something else in a growl that might have been a curse, but the language he used was so strange that Nick couldn't be sure. In a flash of a nanosecond, Thorne was covered in scaly armor that had spikes protruding from his shoulders and elbows. He glanced at Nick.
You've no real powers, do you?
Au contraire, mon frère. I'm able to annoy all adults in 10 syllables or less. Sometimes I don't even have to speak at all. I just walk into the room and it rankles them.
I can see that,
Thorne said dryly. Nick tensed as armor appeared on his body, too. What's this?
In the event they get past me and Asmodeus, who is going to fight with me or find himself disemboweled on my feet, let's hope that keeps them from dragging you off to somewhere you don't want to go.
Before Nick could ask him to elaborate, the door burst open. Thorne let fly a ball of fire into the chest of a tall black blob. Asmodeus moved to stand in front of Nick and behind Thorne. Asmodeus flashed a grin at Nick over his shoulder. Let's hope they don't make it through the big guy, huh?
Where's Adarian?
The blob hissed. With both of his hands on fire, literally, Thorne stood at the ready, but he didn't launch his fire at the beast.
You missed him. I smell him. He's here.
Thorne's hands flared brighter.
Do you see him anywhere? Now get out before I decide to answer this attack with one of my own. I smell him,
it insisted. It sniffed the air like a bloodhound. Then it froze and turned its black eyes to Nick.
It's you.
As he started to rush forward, he burst into flames. Shrieking, it hit the ground and became a dark stain at Thorne's feet. By the look on Thorne's face, and the way he immediately went into warrior deathmatch stance with both hands throbbing fire, it was obvious he wasn't the one who'd caused the demon's spontaneous combustion. Out of the burning remains of the demon rose a glistening, translucent shadow. It grew larger and turned denser until it formed the shape of a man. Muscular and fierce, he had dark brown dreadlocks. His locks were shorter than Ren's and much more attractive, probably because, unlike Ren, he wasn't completely antisocial. He actually styled his locks. And his goatee was every bit as perfect. He had sharp, angular features, most of which were covered by a pair of opaque black aviator sunglasses. Dressed all in black, he was even more frightening than the demon he'd killed. But the oddest part about his appearance was what flashed through Nick's mind when he looked at the newcomer. He saw him on a black horse in greenish-silver armor that flickered like a living creature. The man held a blood-soaked banner as he gleefully spread out his arm and sent misery to everyone, everywhere he rode.
What the... Bane?
Thorne said in greeting, relaxing only a tiny degree. And as he did so, the fire on his hands turned down to a low, simmering flame.
To what do I owe the honor?
Bane wiped his biker boots on the smoldering remains of the demon he'd killed. I smelled a fringe guard and wondered what he was doing here, since this is not their domain. He turned his head in Nick's direction and quirked a sinister smile. Now I understand completely. So this is the baby Malachi Grimm's been teaching. Interesting. Nick looked to Thorne to see if this was friend or foe. From Thorne's reaction, he could tell absolutely nothing. Until the fire on his hands finally went out. He gestured from Bane to Nick.
Nick, meet Bane.
Interesting name. Bane? Nick asked. What, did your parents not like you? Bane let out an evil laugh. Not really, but that's all right. It meant that I didn't have to worry about mourning them after I killed them. There technically wasn't anything threatening in that, and yet Bane was not someone you wanted to meet late at night, especially not when you were alone. And unarmed. Take that back, Nick wouldn't want to meet him in a full suit of Kevlar wrapped in C4 with a grenade launcher over his shoulder. Even with all that protection on your body, Bane would still be terrifying. Asmodeus vanished from in front of him, only to reappear by Nick's side so that he could whisper in his ear, "Bane is a good friend of Grimm's." Nick hesitated as his earlier vision of Bane and this latest tidbit came together and forced a realization on him that he didn't want to have. No, it wasn't possible. Was it? Nick cleared his throat. "For the record, you're not..." A slow, taunting smile curved the right side of Bane's mouth. "One of the four riders of the apocalypse?" "Yes, Nick. I am." Stunned to the core of his being, Nick could barely accept that. Strange, right? He could handle his boss being an ancient Greek general, Asheron being an 11,000-year-old whatever, and all the rest of the paranormal crap he stewed in. But this? It seemed truly impossible. After all you've been through, you're really gonna doubt this? Yeah, he'd seen that episode of X-Files a few times too many, and while he wanted to deny Bane's words all day long and into the next millennia, he couldn't. Scarily enough, it all made sense. Nick raked a curious frown over Bane, from the tip of his biker boots to the top of his dreads, aside from the obvious Faith No More wardrobe ripoff. "You look so normal. Man, would my priest be disappointed?" Father Jeffrey expected the riders in flowing robes, like they had been depicted in some of the tarot decks Nick had seen the psychics using outside the cathedral in Jackson Square. Bane wasn't amused. "I now understand Grimm's need to pull the heart out of you, and here I just thought it was Grimm." "Nope, you really are that annoying." Nick arched a brow. "And this explains what Grimm meant when he said any time he got together with his friends, it didn't go well for humanity. You guys are bad for crops." Bane took it in stride and returned with a counter. "The same could be said for you and your friends." "Maybe." Well, then again, whenever Bubba and Mark got together, it did tend to go nuclear. As much as he hated admitting it, Pestilence had a point. Thorn returned to wearing his posh navy suit. "So, Bane, why are you here?" "Same reason everyone will be converging on you soon, and it's not for your gory hospitality. The Malachi is back in Asmodeus. People tend to notice." Thorn welcomed that news as much as Nick did. "We've got to shield him." Bane snorted. "Good luck with that." Thorn crossed his arms over his chest. "No, not luck, Bane. We're going to shield him." Bane shook his head in denial. "That's not my agenda." "Is today, buddy," Thorn said with a wry grin. "Unless you're tired of breathing. I do know a few people who'd be willing to replace you on the cosmic food chain." Bane let out a long, suffering sigh. "I don't understand you. Why are you fighting for the worms?" Thorn shrugged. "Because some of us believe in doing the right thing even when we shouldn't. And you're going to do the right thing where Nick is concerned because I have your number, and I'm not afraid to dial it." Bane's eyes glowed a wicked fluorescent green. "I hate you, Thorn." "Feelings mutual, Bane. Now man the perimeter and shield the Malachi." Grumbling, Bane stepped over the still smoldering remains of the demon. "You owe me, Lucius." "Pestilence, pestilence, pestilence. I've already paid you back. You're walking out my door, and in one piece, no less. Will my mercy ever have limitations?" Flipping him off over his shoulder, Bane left them. Thorn sobered the minute he was gone and turned to face Nick. "You want to know what I am, Nick? I'm a creature unlike you, conceived for only one purpose, to be a tool for evil." "Yeah, okay. No news to him there." Thorn didn't exactly hide that fact. Rather, he embraced his role with both arms and a mighty hug. "Isn't that what you are?" Thorn laughed. "I can see why you'd think that, but no. I am my own man. No one tells me who I am or how to behave, who to kill and when, or how I define myself. Not my birthright or supposed written destiny.
Definitely not my biological donors. I alone control me.
Strange as it was, Nick took comfort in those words. So, I don't have to become the Malachi?
No, that's not what I'm saying. You are the Malachi, just as you're part human. Nothing will ever change that. But you don't have to let that birthright consume or define you. It's hard to fight against your nature, like an addiction, only this one is genetic and hardwired into your DNA. That impulse to harm rides you with spurs, eats you alive, but you can't let it win. You have to remember that the evil part serves you as much as the good part does. There's a time for peace and a time for war, and sometimes you have to embrace them both. Most of all, you have to control them.
Can you teach me? Thorne shook his head.
Only you can walk in your shoes, my friend. And I'm certainly not the voice in your head you want to listen to. I literally have destroyed everything I ever loved, either on purpose or by total accident. Believe me when I say that second chances are even more rare than finding true love. If you ever get one, don't squander it, kid.
Those words haunted him. You know about Ambrose? Thorne's eyes glowed the same bright green that Bane's had done.
Have you ever heard the term metaverse?
Yeah, contrary to my mother's most highly held belief, I really do things other than play video games and text my friends. I know about alternate universes. Thorne inclined his head to him. There was a note of respect in his eyes.
Then you know that simultaneously every outcome of everyone's life is constantly in motion, one in each of the universes. Nix infinitus. And yet, here we are, in this life.
Yeah, but one thing he'd never been able to figure out. How do we know that this is the right existence? How do I know one of the other universes isn't the one I should be living in? Thorne gave a low laugh.
How do we indeed? That is the question. Who's to say if this is the right life or not? And while I have an answer, you don't need it. Other than for me to mention that this is the only version of you and Ambrose that you know. In order to save you, Ambrose has bent the fabric that none of us are allowed to touch. He has breached this existence and is trying to gain access to the outcome that was achieved in an alternate universe and by another Nick and make it happen here. The problem with that is
you can't have the same outcome in two different dimensions.
Exactly. Each one must play out as a different dance. In quantum mechanics, it's termed the uncertainty principle, which says that the more you know about the position of one matter, the less you can control, determine, or know about the momentum of the other. When Ambrose came back and began interfering with the timeline of this universe, he created a buckle or bridge between the planes of existence. Things are now coming into this universe that weren't here before. Things he can neither control nor see the potential problems it'll cause you both down the road. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, by trying to help me, Ambrose screwed us over big time. Thorne gave him a sarcastic salute.
That's a little harsh, but true. Now no one can predict what will happen to you, how this newest twist will unravel. But one thing you can bank on, you are the grand prize in a bloody contest. Whoever can bring you into Noir will dominate this world and be rewarded greatly. Nick, my boy, to the preternatural creatures of this universe, you're infamous, and there's a bounty on your head that's staggering. Hell, you're lucky I'm not turning you in.
The way Thorne said that, it made Nick wonder if one day Thorne might not change his mind and hand him over. Cody stood up as Dr. Burdett came out with Nick's attending physician to speak to his mother. Her eyes swimming in tears, Charisse went over to them. Cody followed with Caleb until they stood behind her and Manyara. The others stayed back, giving Charisse room.
Will he live?
Charisse's voice shook. Dr. Burdett pulled her into a tight hug.
Sugar, didn't I tell you we weren't going to let that baby die? We have him stabilized, and he's resting.
Charisse's blue eyes widened.
That sounds like there's a butt in there.
It was the male doctor who answered.
There is. He's in a coma and
We're not sure why.
Frowning, Charisse reached out for the support of Manyara before turning her attention back to the doctor.
I don't understand. What do you mean?
The doctor sighed.
He has no reason to be in a coma. His injuries weren't that extreme. Don't get me wrong, they are bad, but not life-threatening. Not to mention, there's a lot of brain activity going on that we can't explain. It's like he's not really in a coma, that on some level he's highly alert, but nothing we do can revive him. I've never seen anything like this.
Cody exchanged a nervous glance with Caleb.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
She whispered.
Yeah.
Nick's somewhere he doesn't need to be.
If it's where I'm thinking, I can't go.
Caleb growled low in his throat. Yeah, that would wreck my sucky day even worse than what I'm about to go do.
He winked at her before he headed out the door. Dr. Burdett squeezed Charisse tight.
I can't imagine he won't come out of it in a day or two, honey. He will be fine, Charisse, you'll see.
Charisse drew a ragged breath.
I have told him so many times not to fight. Why couldn't he for once just listen to me and do what I say? Why didn't he give over his wallet and...
He didn't fight his attacker, Cody interjected, wanting to protect Nick any way she could, even from his own mother. Charisse frowned at her.
What? That was the only thing he'd say until he passed out. He wanted me to make sure that you understood that he'd done what you asked and hadn't fought back when he was attacked.
She's right,
the doctor concurred.
All of his wounds were defensive, and not a single mark on him says he fought back in any way. From the looks of his injuries, I'd say he was on the ground in a fetal position, covering his head with his arms the entire time he was being beaten.
Charisse sobbed even harder.
So, I'm the one who got him hurt like this?
Tears rolled down her cheeks.
Oh God, what have I done?
Cody rubbed her back.
He just wants to please you, Mrs. Gaucher. He'd eat broken glass for breakfast if you asked him to.
But the self-loathing and torment in her blue eyes said that she wasn't going to forgive herself any time soon.
Can I see him?
She asked the doctor.
Sure.
Dr. Burdett led her to the back while Cody closed her eyes and tried to sense Caleb's location. He was completely gone from this plane of existence. If he had descended into the nether realm to find Nick, it wouldn't be fun for him. Unlike her, he'd known the horrors of that place firsthand. What little she knew about it had come from others.
You're too close to the Malachi, Nakota. You're losing your objectivity.
She knew that deep masculine voice inside her head. It came from Sraosha. His title was her guardian. But in truth, he was more like a warden who reported her every move to their superiors.
I've lost nothing.
He grumbled but didn't speak again. She knew what he and the others thought of her, that she should kill Nick and move on to the next Malachi. But her brother had promised her that within the balance that had allowed one of the Sephiri to turn against his own and bring them down, the Malachi could do the same. A Malachi would be born with equal balanced parts inside him, just like Jared had been, and that one special beast could be turned to their side and used against Noir and his sisters. Nick was the only one in all these centuries who'd been born with that unique criteria, and there would never be another. He was their one and only hope. If she and Caleb could turn him, they could stop Noir. Without his Malachi, he would be controllable. Forever. However, Sraosha and the others were correct. If they failed to kill Nick before he came into all of his powers, because of that mixed blood, he would be the only Malachi who could destroy all of them. He would truly be invincible. And they would all be dead or imprisoned.
We are not assassins,
she reminded Sraosha in her head,
especially not of children.
He's not a child, Bellum. You know that. He is the deadliest creature ever born. For now, he's weak. But every day he grows stronger. Deadlier. Meanwhile, you're growing weaker, where he's concerned.
I'm not weak. She had never been weak.
Don't mistake my mercy for weakness. I assure you, if I know he is lost to us, I will cut his throat myself and deliver his heart to all of you.
Because if she didn't, he would destroy everyone she loved. The only problem was, he was fast becoming one of the people she loved most.
You will do your duty.
Srosha pulled back from her.
Yes, she would do her duty, and she would keep her promise to her brother, even if it killed her. And especially if it meant killing Nick.
Chapter 9. In his raven form, Caleb drew up short as he found Nick in the last place he'd expected. Under Thorne's protection, in the center of hell. Or, more pointedly, in Thorne's office, learning how to sword fight.
The bright summer sun is shining in the darkest corner of Tartarus.
That and snow in August in New Orleans would be more likely than the sight below him as he used his powers to see inside the massive black mansion. Thorne hated everyone. No, not hated. That was too kind a word for the utter contempt and disdain he held for every living and undead creature in existence. His hatred was so intense, it practically oozed out of his molecules. Centuries ago, the two of them had been friendly. At least, as friendly as anyone could be with something like Thorne, who only trusted others to screw him over. Ironically, that was what had bonded them together, their mutual disdain and mistrust for everyone else in existence. A true nihilist, Thorne believed in nothing, and nothing believed in him. Well, not entirely true. Caleb believed in Thorne's willingness to kill any and everything around him, especially if he found it or them annoying. This can't be good. Thorne taking a liking to you had to be the same as trying to befriend a starving bear. Sooner or later, it was going to look over at you and think, lunch. Yet, there he was, protecting and teaching Nick. Talk about a mind freak. It went against all natural laws as Caleb knew them. Next thing, cobras would be sleeping with mongoose. Not mongooses, because that just sounded stupid to him. LSU and Alabama fans would be having cookouts together, and one might actually put the other out if he or she caught fire. Yeah, and the mighty war god Ares would go picking roses with a Girl Scout troop. All of the above was much more likely than Thorne helping Nick. And Caleb refused to believe there was some selfless reason motivating this. There had to be something in it for Thorne, or he wouldn't do it. But what? Tucking his wings in, Caleb swooped down to dive bomb them through an open window. Please don't let Thorne be sadistic enough to have glass there. For the first time ever, Nick heard the voices in the ether speaking. Some were left from past spirits who'd gone on, while echoes of their life forces remained trapped. Most were from the living, the thoughts they let out into the universe, never realizing beings who were sensitive could pick them up and hear their innermost secrets. The rest were warnings from the living things people didn't know they could communicate with. All you had to do was listen. It was like hearing static on a radio, just noise at first, and then above the friction, total clarity. The more carefully you tuned in, the clearer it became. And once you had the right frequency, you heard every nuance. Thorne cupped Nick's head in his massive paw of a hand.
That's the source of life you hear now. Feel your place in the universe and see how vast it is. How many beings call it home.
He was right, it was vast, but there's so many people in pain. It was overwhelming.
While he'd known people suffered, to actually hear it? Their combined pain opened his eyes. While he'd felt alone in his suffering, he realized that he was merely one of billions who felt exactly the same kind of impotent frustration that he did.
That they were alone and that no one understood them or their situation. That they had no control over the things that battered their souls one after another until they were reeling from shock.
Thorne narrowed those eerie green eyes on him. Everyone's in pain, Nick. Some just hide it better than others. As William Goldman so eloquently put it, life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says differently is selling something.
Nick nodded
as he finally understood. The whole point of life is learning to live with the consequences of the bad decisions we've made.
Thorne scowled at him, as if trying to read his mind.
Where did that come from?
It's something Caleb says a lot.
His frown deepened until he appeared to have an epiphany.
You mean the demon Malthus?
As if on cue, a raven cawed, then flew between them, driving them apart. Turning around to face the raven, Thorne unsheathed his sword for battle. With a bright flash, the crow became Caleb in his full demon form. The black armor he wore appeared to bleed from every crevice. Rivulets of red ran all over the metal and dripped silently to the floor. With long orange hair, he had yellow eyes like a serpent. If that didn't clash enough, his skin was red as the ooze on his armor. His black, leather-like wings expanded and twitched as if daring Thorne to attack him.
Dude, Nick said dryly, we've gotta see a plastic surgeon about your unfortunate birth defect. And the orange hair? Really? We need to talk L'Oreal. Black's a better neutral. You know, it wouldn't clash with your skin tone so much.
Flashing his fangs at Nick in irritation, Caleb stepped aside to give Thorne a clear path to him and swept his arm out as if putting Nick on display.
If you want to kill him, Thorne, I won't protest.
Thorne laughed.
How many fools have fallen for that tactic? Not enough, unfortunately. He still lives. And here I am.
Caleb cocked his head to study Thorne intently. His gaze narrowed on the sword Thorne had yet to lower.
Are we fighting? I don't know. You plan to attack me? Only if you attack the boy. Well then.
Thorne sheathed his weapon and shook his head at Caleb.
I can't believe even a Darian would waste a good Deva's talent on babysitting.
Deva was Caleb's demon classification. Though as a rule they were mid-level demons, Caleb's powers were infused by something that allowed him to function much higher than that. He also had powers most Deva didn't. There had to be a reason for that, but Caleb wasn't into sharing, not even when Nick begged. Caleb slid a suspicious stare toward Nick.
We have got to get you out of here immediately.
Good, Nick agreed. 'Cause Toto want to go home, Dorothy. He clicked his heels together. There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Grimacing, Caleb glanced up at the sky.
If someone drops a house on me, I'm gonna be really upset at both of you.
Thorne snorted.
That would require a good witch, Bonchance, finding that here, mon ami.
Good point. We are in the bowels of all evil, after all. And yes, Thorne, I do include you in that category. I've spent enough time around you to know how deep your wicked tendencies run. Thorne laughed.
If you were a woman, Malthus, flattery like that would get you lucky.
Caleb tucked his wings down around his body so that they formed another layer over his armor.
I'm not even going to respond to that. Now, while your brain's functioning, any idea how to get Snotwit out of here?
Nick gaped at the uncalled-for insult. Snotwit? Excuse me?
Really wish I could, Nick, Caleb said under his breath.
Thorne considered the answer before he spoke.
Other than making him regain his consciousness, no.
Caleb manifested a mace, then took a step toward Nick, who quickly backed up. Thorne grabbed the mace out of his hand.
I said conscious, Malthus, not dead.
Oh, come on, demon spawn. Just one little concussion, please? I've earned it, if for no other reason than he made me have to come here to get him. Nick would be offended if he didn't know Caleb was joking. At least, he hoped Caleb was joking. That was a joke, right? Caleb patted him on the cheek.
Of course it was, pumpkin. Why would I want to kill little old you?
Yeah, that sent a chill down his spine as reasons stockpiled in his mind. But that was mild compared to the all-out panic that set in a second later when Bane appeared in Thorne's office.
We got a problem.
He passed a stern look from Thorne to Caleb.
What?
Thorne asked.
Noir has caught a scent of your little buddy, and he's about to declare war on you to get him back. He thinks you've found him and are planning to use the Malachi against him.
Of course he does, paranoid idiot.
Thorne threw his hand out and illuminated the opposite side of the room. Images flashed until they focused on one of the walls that surrounded his fortress. There were all manner of entities headed their way. Nick could only identify a small percentage of the demons. The rest? Are those bugs?
Three heads turned to give him a look that questioned his intelligence.
Yes, Bane said, his voice dripping with sarcasm. The baddest ass in all the universe is attacking us with big giant bugs. Help me, I'm being clobbered by a flea. Quick, Malphus, fetch the raid.
Nick rolled his eyes.
What are they, then?
Caleb sighed. You know how Greeks have a three-headed dog that guards their underworld?
Yeah?
Those are what Noir uses to guard his. Basically, they're bloodhounds with exoskeletons so that certain classes of demons can't hurt them or escape them.
He flashed an evil grin at Nick.
For the record, kid, you happen to be on that list.
Oh, and the bug dogs could climb straight up a wall, as was proven when they reached Thorn's territory and, without hesitation, walked straight up it. Caleb looked at Thorn.
How much fire can you conjure? Not enough to take all of them out. It would drain me too fast and leave me at Noir's mercy.
Nick's heart raced. We're dead, aren't we?
No, Nick,
Caleb said in a deceptively calm tone.
We're worse than dead.
Nick widened his eyes. What's worse than dead? Smiling, Bane clapped him on the shoulder.
Lucky you. You're about to find out.
Cody!
Nakota literally jumped where she stood in Nick's hospital room as Caleb screamed in her head.
What?
She asked, projecting her thoughts to him so that the other people in the room wouldn't think she'd lost her mind. Which she most likely had, but she didn't want to be confined to one of the mental floors for it.
Wake Nick up!
She glanced over to Manyara and Charisse, who were talking in a low tone to Dr. Burdett on the other side of Nick's bed.
I can't, Caleb, not exactly alone here.
Yeah, well, if you don't get him conscious, he's about to be enslaved to Noir.
Terror consumed her. That was all they needed. Are you serious?
Do I sound like I'm kidding?
No, he sounded panicked, which made her blood race even more. Caleb didn't panic, as a rule. He was always eerily calm, no matter the threat. If he was rattled, it was bad. But how could she get Charisse, Manyara, and Bubba's mama out of the room? If she set it on fire, that would be bad. And it'd most likely get her banned from the hospital.
Come on, Cody, think.
Caleb's voice was even more insistent.
Nick's about to die, Cody. We can't hold them.
His sentence ended in a sound of anguish. Glancing around, she tried to find something to use to distract the women so that she could wake Nick. But the hospital room was about as bare as anything could be. Drat. If she went over there and started shaking him while he was hooked to all that equipment, they'd think she'd lost her mind. Her luck, they'd call security.
I have to do something. Fast.
With no choice, she focused on Charisse and pushed her thoughts into Charisse's mind. His mother shook her head, then scowled.
You know, she said to Manyara and Bobby Jean, I think I'm hungry all of a sudden. Why don't we grab a quick bite downstairs in the cafeteria while he's still sleeping?
Both women looked at her like she'd lost her mind, especially since she'd insisted the entire time that she be near Nick.
You sure?
Manyara asked. Charisse nodded.
We won't go far. We can rush back if something changes.
Manyara and Dr. Burdett exchanged frowns, since that had been their argument for hours as Charisse refused to leave in case Nick needed her. Cody prodded them.
I'll stay with Nick and let you know if he wakes.
Charisse smiled.
Thank you, Cody.
Cody waited until they were gone before she rushed to the bed.
Nick, she shook him gently. Come on, baby, wake up.
But he wasn't responding at all. She shook him more vigorously, and he still didn't move.
Caleb?
She tried to reach him again. He didn't answer either. Panic consumed her. What was going on? Was she too late? Had Noir already captured them? No, it couldn't happen. It didn't bear thinking on. Her heart racing, she kept trying. She was the only hope they had.
I won't let you guys down. I promise.
Nick was quickly learning that on the paranormal food chain, he was kibble, and everyone else above him on that chain wanted a bite out of his hide. That being said, Bane, Caleb, and Thorn were taking the brunt of the fight so that they could keep him from being dragged off by one of the others.
If only I'd brought my sword with me.
He knew better than to let that out of his sight.
It was one of the few things he'd been given that never let him down. The sword always worked the way it was supposed to. Pointy end went into his enemies and made them bleed. Simplicity of design and dependability were beautiful things. Oh, wait a second. A weird thought occurred to him as he bashed one of the demons over the head with the book in his hands. Could he summon his sword into this realm? It was infused with part of his DNA. Supposedly it was in tune with him, and he'd been working for months on the ability to summon his sword when he needed it. It was supposed to come to him on his command. Nothing else worked the way it was supposed to. Why should the sword obey him, especially since he was in another dimension? Still, it was worth a try. An effort wouldn't cost him anything. Not trying was a guaranteed failure. Closing his eyes, Nick did his best to imagine the sword in his hand, its ornate hilt filling his palm. Just as he started feeling the heft of it in his hand, he was struck in the chest. Nick staggered back as something else hit him and pain exploded through his entire body. He opened his eyes to see mordant demons right on top of him. Ah, now that was just rude, and he was tired of dealing with mordants. They smelled, and they were just plain old obnoxious. Other demons had Thorn on the ground. Caleb was bleeding profusely, and Bane was pinned into a corner. Man or mouse? Time to be judged, and he better not be lacking. Nick opened himself up to the ether and let it whisper to him. At the same time, he called for his sword. Light exploded all around them. Half the demons hissed, shrinking back from it. Holding his hand up, Nick continued to whisper even as he was forced to avert his eyes from the light to keep from going blind. The other half of the demons renewed their fight to reach him, and as they drew so close that he could feel their fetid breath on his skin, a clap of thunder rang out in his head. One second they were nipping at his heels, in the next he drove them back with a booming blast that sent all of them tumbling. Nick started to laugh, until he realized that he couldn't turn whatever it was off. Worse, it was building up, faster and faster, trying to take control of him. He cried out as pain rushed through his veins. It felt like he was burning from the inside out. Caleb shouted something at him, but he couldn't hear it. I'm dying. And there was nothing they could do to stop it. Chapter 10. Nick felt his life force draining out of him. Then, just before the darkness took him under completely, he fell back into nothing. Desperate, he tried to grab onto something to stop his rapid descent, anything. Still, he fell. Until he hit a sharp object that stabbed him so deeply, he was surprised it wasn't protruding through his chest. He waited for... he didn't know. Disoriented and sick, he only wanted to wake up at home and have everything back to normal. But that was easier said than done. I have to face whatever it is. Opening his eyes, he went rigid, unable to believe his sight. For once, it wasn't something from a horror movie. Instead, he stared into the face of heaven, and it was smiling brightly at him. Cody? She clutched his hand. I thought I'd lost you. So did I. He tried to move, then groaned as absolute misery pierced him. Did you beat me? I didn't, but someone did. Bristol. How could he have forgotten? The worm had jumped him on his way to Liza's. All of a sudden, Caleb appeared in human form on the opposite side of the bed. Thank goodness he lived, but the peeved light in his eyes said he wanted to finish what Bristol had started. Then he glared at Cody. Could you have cut that any closer? She gestured to Nick. Talk to your friend here. He was the one who wouldn't wake up. Yeah, Caleb breathed, turning his vicious glare back to Nick. What was that you did? He scowled. What do you mean? Do you recall the Nether Realm? Duh, not exactly something you'd forget without massive amounts of electroshock therapy. Of course I do, and I never want to go there again. That makes two of us. Cody glanced back and forth between them. So what happened? Caleb jerked his chin toward Nick. Your boyfriend turned into a human torch and annihilated a number of demons before you yanked him out of there. She appeared impressed by his description.
A torch, really?
Caleb nodded.